Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our monthly fixed income conversation as we will spend some time diving into the latest fixed income strategist publication from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Making the Grade is the title. I do have with me on the line today the authors of the publication, Leslie Falconio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas, as well as Barry McAlinden, Senior Fixed Income Strategist for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. With that, Leslie, Barry, thank you both for dropping by today and for spending some time with our listeners and clients. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Let's maybe begin with the market update as it's hard to believe that we are nearing the end of the first quarter of 2024. So with that, Leslie, what kind of performance trends have you seen across fixed income lately?
Yeah, I mean, we entered 2024 with two expectations regarding fixed income. One would be that interest rates would rise because of the exuberance that we saw in November, December, given that the Fed was officially on pause. We saw the 10-year yield at the end of the year. We actually reached 373. We saw a large amount of spread compression within risk assets, and we saw the market price in cuts that were, 160, 170 basis points in 2024 that we felt was a little bit overzealous. So our expectation one is that interest rates would rise. When we look at the performance for the first quarter, they've actually done that. They've gone to about a high of 434. They've priced out all these overzealous rate cuts. Now the market's around 80 basis points in terms of 2024, really converging to that Fed guidance. So that was the first expectation. And in that regard, I'm really pleased of how we projected that. The second one, however, I have to say that, I'm a bit surprised at, and one thing I believe we underestimated is the strength of that really true credit embedded sectors. Because, one of the things that we had done at the end of the year after making some, profits on our higher credit embedded type allocations, we took those profits and went neutral with the assumption that because the market had gotten so overzealous the last 2 months of the year, because rates went to 373, because financial conditions were loosening, that in the backup that we expected in the first quarter, some of these higher credit embedded sectors would actually start to widen out and spread. And that has not been the case. I mean, what we've seen in the first quarter has been the outperformance of not just credit, but really the deep credit sectors, like the triple C's of high yield. And those higher qualities, which we actually prefer, some of them have done more poor than others. It depends on the correlation of interest rates, given the fact that interest rates have risen. But overall, it's really been that deep credit sectors that have done very well, akin to their higher correlation to the equity market, which has obviously reached these all-time highs again. So the first quarter performance has been a bit split. The lower quality has done well. We do think they're tight here. The higher quality has not done as well, but we do believe that going forward, particularly in the second half of the year, that's when the asset class will really start to kick in as the growth starts to slow, as the Fed leans more towards, a cut, and whether the cut is June or July, it makes no difference to me. So, and that's when we think that the higher quality will actually really start to kick in. The embedded interest rate exposure will start to drive those total returns, and obviously the carry that you can get from both, lower quality and high quality. But the difference is the higher quality is the cheaper sector. The higher quality is has a better risk return profile going into the second half of the year.
Well, thank you, Leslie, for that performance update and outlook. So against that backdrop, if we tie in again the title of this month's publication, Making the Grade, to welcome Barry into the conversation. Barry, within this month's Fixed Income Strategist, you do spend some time outlining the investment case for the investment grade corporate asset class. So what factors, Barry, support CIO's most preferred view of the asset class?
Yeah, it's a great question, Dan, especially since, investment grade credit spreads, we know are not cheap. At the index level, the spread is only about 97 basis points. That's a two-year tight. And, if we dip below like 90 basis points, it would be an all-time tightened spread. But, we do think that spread levels are appropriate when you consider just the overall fundamental backdrop where economic growth is still, trending pretty well this year, We have a solid corporate profit picture, and as Leslie said, the Fed likely to start cutting rates later this year. So spreads are within their range that we've seen during non-recessionary periods. But if you think about investment-grade corporates versus, let's say, treasuries, you know, there's two components of the return going forward, interest rates and carry, that both of those sectors offer. But where we think investment grade has a bit of an advantage is, you know, number one, the curve is not inverted like it is in treasuries. So to capture that duration, you're not sacrificing yield going further out the curve to that 7 to 10 year point like you do in treasuries. And number two is actually the coupon. So the market weighted coupon for investment grade stands at 4.2%, and that's up from a low of about 3.7 in 2022. So for treasuries, it's 2.7% is the current market weighted coupon, and that's up from a low of 1.8. But we do think that that coupon advantage is an important component of the carry that investment grade, you know, will offer going forward. Now, all of that is all well and good, assuming credit spreads don't widen. Right. So how much would credit spreads have to widen before you start underperforming treasuries? And that measure is only about 15 basis points. So it's not a real large threshold. But we think, it's fair enough, given the other factors I just mentioned, in order to still, you know, feel pretty good about investment grade returns going forward. And as Leslie said, especially if the rate environment becomes a bit more supportive during the second part of this year.
Okay, so now that we have a better understanding of the investment case, Barry, what would you cite as being some considerations investors should be mindful of when constructing investment grade portfolios?
Sure. So, you know, we do like investment grade exposure, you know, as part of our strategic asset allocation, as well as having a tactical preference. I think for investors who are utilizing, let's say, investment grade corporates as a tool, you know, to provide a specific income stream, the maturity range is important. So, we do like in CIO both the short end and the intermediate, so 1 to 3 and 7 to 10. So in that regard, I think the environment is conducive for, you know, your traditional 1 to 10 year corporate ladder where you do that enables you to have exposure, you know, to both parts of that barbell. I think secondly, in addition to, you know, maturities, just think about an investment grade. You know, I've seen over time it could be easy for investors to be over-concentrated in a certain name or a certain sector, oftentimes because they, you know, it may be providing the highest yield at any given point in time. But it's really important to make sure you're not over-concentrated, even though it might be a high-quality issuer or company. We have seen even high-quality companies, right, come into experience trouble that cause spread volatility. So, yeah, the second main point I would stress is just, you know, having, if you are doing the ladders, to do it in a disciplined way, where they're structured across issuers, different companies and different industry sectors. So those would be two things to consider.
Well, thank you, Barry, for that guidance and for sharing those considerations with our listeners. So as we begin to wrap up, Leslie, more broadly speaking, how are you currently recommending that investors should position within fixed income?
Yeah, our view of interest rates going to 3.5% by the end of the year is not based on some sort of catalyst that we expect in the overall economy, right? I think that what we believe and what we think is true is that the Fed will cut at some point this year. And the fixed income market is forward-looking, right? So when you get to the second half of the year, what will happen is to start to price in those 2025 cuts. And the 3.5% 10-year yield does not mean you're going to have a hard landing. It's simply that the Fed will start taking that higher Fed fund rate and gradually moving it lower because at this point it is at a very restrictive level. So we think the economy slows. We do think that inflation comes down, but the fact that we have this higher sticky inflation, we actually don't believe is necessarily going to collapse in the near term, and nor does the market believe that. So when we think about how we're going to be positioned is that we look for this 3.5% 10-year yield at the end of the year. And we like this higher quality simply because, one, we think it's cheap to some of this really credit-embedded type sectors. And it's not that we think there's going to be a catalyst within credit or high yield. We just don't believe that you're compensated for taking on that risk. Number two, when you look at the carry that you're earning in some of these sectors, the majority of that carry is due to the level of interest rates. So if it's due to the level of interest rates, then you really need to take a step back and say, why are you taking on so much credit risk here, right, particularly at these levels? So we like the higher quality side. As Barry had mentioned, you know, and as Barry wrote in Lead, we like these investment-grade corporates, you know, both, you know, we'd like ending at around that five-year area of the yield curve. We prefer in a barbell position because the yield curve is inverted and it'll likely stay inverted until the latter part of the year. Two, we like agency MBS because they have faced some headwinds because of the rise in rates and some of the volatility in interest rates that we've seen in the first 2.5 months of the year. We still like the TIPS market. They've done very well since we've since inception, but we're going to stay with the TIPS market for now because we do believe the sticky inflation will probably last for a little longer. So our view is that we have these higher quality sectors where you could still earn the carry, right? But you're not taking on something that has really true embedded interest rate risk without being compensated for it. And we do think in the latter part that having greater interest rate exposure, having that price appreciation will actually be a driver to your total return in the second half.
Well, Leslie, Barry, thank you both for dropping by Top of the Morning today, spending some time with our listeners, our clients, and for sharing your current thinking, positioning recommendations when it comes to fixed income. And do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Thanks very much,
Dan. Thank you, Dan.
Absolutely. Again today, we have been joined by Leslie Falconio, head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas, as well as Barry McAlinden, senior fixed income strategist for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Leslie and Barry have been talking about the Fixed Income Strategist publication. The latest edition, Making the Grade, is now available for you up on ubs.com/CIO. Though for clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the publication directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.